And welcome to the Rock and Roll Survivors Podcast, dedicated to those in front of the curtain, behind the curtain, and somewhere in between. So let's get started. Well, Patty Quatro, we have so much to get to in terms of what's next for the Pleasure Seekers. It is still the beginning of 1969. You have a new lineup with Nancy Rogers having replaced Darlene Arnone on drums. And so now it's the Quatro sisters. It's you, Patty Pleasure, Susie Soul, and Arlene, Foxy Lady. And you also still have Pammy Benford and the Bird. And now you have Nancy Dum Dum Rogers, her nickname choice.
Oh my God.
D-U-M, not that she's an idiot. So I don't, Pat, we jokingly, but it was apt. We called the last episode, Shit Happened. So if you want to hear all the sordid details and even gross details, and I mean this for the listeners, go back and listen to episode 42. But Patty, we're going to get to some gigs in this new year, in 1969, that you did right before you headed off to the Far East. So you go to the Far East in March 69, but in January and February, you have some gigs that I think are worthy of talking about in terms of the Detroit history and all of that. But before we even get there, you said something, my dear, on the previous episode that I couldn't gloss over. You mentioned that in your search for Darlene Arnone's replacement on drums, so this is now late 1969, that Detroit had so many girl bands that you said it was, quote, it was like a music state, close quote, which I love that imagery. But the reason why I don't want to gloss over this is it struck me because what a difference a few years makes, because when you first started with the Pleasure Seekers in Detroit, in Grosse Pointe, in September 64, you were among a handful, I mean one handful, the first really of girl groups who played their own instruments in Detroit. And you told us how you had to keep plucking girls out of your school choir because it was pretty much the only training they had. So I would like you, with your historic third eye and the fact that you just have such fantastic insights and memories about this time, would you reflect on the significant shift for female musicians between this 1964 and 69 time period? I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, actually, it's the end of 1968, going into
69. Yes. Yeah. Thank you.
Pammy, Darlene, and Nancy Rogers were really the only ones we plucked from another girl band. And, you know, I have to say, we were really lucky that Michigan somehow, especially in Detroit, developed so many musicians, females. We were the earliest, but man, there were so many popping up that we were blessed that we could steal them away from some other band. It just, what happened in Detroit? It was Music City. I don't know how to explain it. It makes no sense to me.
Well, I think it does make sense based upon what you're saying, because you even said this back in 64. It was maybe the pool to pull from was smaller, but you had to be top notch as a musician in Detroit. You couldn't just rely upon your looks or because you were a novelty. And so I do think that even these girl groups, these girl musicians had to be better. They had to stand out. Otherwise, again, they might have been laughed at or whatever. So, okay. Well, I just really wanted to hear your thoughts on this because I hear what you're saying now that Detroit was just expanding musically and that included female musicians.
Well, I think that they maybe heard of us. We were so early, 64, and some of them just said, hey, I want to do that. You know, it's something that grew. It just organically. So that's all I can think, you know.
Well, and I am reminded, and we said this before, that your friend, Diane Plemons, who was also a musician in Detroit, that the Pleasure Seekers were this gold standard, if you will, of in terms of your tightness and your talent, that you had to be that good, if not better. So these early gigs I want to get to. This is, again, in early 1969 in Detroit. First gig was January 17th and 18th, and you played at the Village Pub. And you're playing or you're billed with none other than now legendary, but they were new then, the MC5. And for those who may not know, the MC is the Motor City Five. And you played with them a lot during this time. They were your homeboys. They were your friends. And so for those, though, who don't know the iconic call, the musical arms to call of the MC5, when they screamed, "Kick out the jams, motherfuckers," look them up. But Patty, I want you to tell us a little bit about the MC5, more through the lens of your homeboys. Because again, you knew them when they were just starting up. We did not know they were going to become legendary. So what are your memories of first seeing them, playing with them especially, and anything else you want to touch upon?
Oh, they were fabulous. You know, it's funny. We had, oddly, the homeboys, we had no romantic entanglements with them. We just became good friends with them because we were doing so many gigs. And they were electric on stage. I mean, their lead singer was all over that stage. And so was Wayne. Wayne's just a sweetheart, the guitarist. And God, they're all past now. I just can't stand it. It's, you know, when they did Kick Out the Jams, Motherfuckers, that was like a call to arms to every teenager in the world. It became like this iconic saying to all of us, you know? So it was amazing how many times we got to play with them. I loved it. And they played this gig with us, but they were on Friday night and we played Saturday night, the Village Pub. Yes.
I just want to add that I yes, it's iconic, that call to arms, that saying. I still get chills when I hear it. And you were there when it was all happening. What was the audience response? Was it immediately just over the top reception?
Oh, yeah. Anytime they would say that, it was just, you know, the crowd went nuts. And Detroit crowds go nuts anyway. That's what they're made of. You know, music is the culture in Detroit. So, yeah, they would always get a reaction anytime they said that.
I love it. And I do not mean to speak for your brother, Michael Quattro, and I do want him to tell us this story in his own words, but I do have to share this hilarious moment where your brother, Michael Quattro, booked the MC5 at a Catholic church somewhere in Detroit.
Oh my God.
And he was begging the band, please, please do not say kick out the Jams, motherfuckers. Please, please, because they were still new. They weren't iconic then. And it was so blasphemous to use an obvious word here. And your brother was just pleading with them. And so the set starts, and your brother had no idea because they didn't tell him. And they open up with kick out the Jams, mother superiors.
Oh my God, I remember that. Oh my God, it was so hilarious. Oh God.
Well, tell us also at these gigs or at this gig, you have a story about Susie splitting her finger and doesn't even know it. Tell us the story.
Oh my God. Well, Susie was, doing her usual get wild up front. She was the front gal, and it was Keep Me Hanging On, one of our show tunes. She jumps on Arlene's organ, to keep singing and going crazy in her gyrations. She hits her finger on a cymbal just somehow and cut it open. And
Oh.
she didn't even notice. She's going on and it's bleeding. She ended up needing six stitches later. I mean, it was hilarious.
I mean, a cymbal, for those who don't know, is not
Yeah.
thin. That's a
No.
thick
No.
slice.
No. She must have really hit it, like moving sideways or something, but man, did she do a number. Ay.
Well, was it spewing or was it dripping down her arms or both?
I don't remember. I think it started just dribbling, and finally she probably, I don't think she even noticed it till the song was over, but oh my God.
Oh
Yeah.
my God.
Crazy
Susie
things
really,
happen. Yeah.
throws herself into it. Well, about a week later, on January 24th, you play at the Autorama Cobo Hall with the Rationals, I believe, and SRC, Scott Richardson Case. And just a moment to pause, where you were talking about the MC5 and how those homeboys are no longer with us. This is a newer homeboy to have recently passed, and I don't think you and I want to skip past Scott Richardson. We will certainly be honoring him in much more depth very soon. We even have some pre-interviews hearing his amazing voice.
Yes.
But he, in the context of these gigs, this is again 1968 going into 69, but we're in 69 now because he knew you earlier. Scott so admired you, in particular, Patty, and your parents, but you, because of the way you handled the band, the way you were a band leader, he was too. And so I just want you to tell us if you remember anything about this Autorama performance at Cobo Hall, whether the Pleasure Seekers, the Rationals, and SRC.
Well, we love both of those bands. The Rationals were a terrific band too, as was SRC. This was the 17th annual Autorama, world's largest custom car and hot rod show, presented by the Michigan Hot Rod Association at Cobo Hall, of course, again, and it was for 3 days, and there were a whole bunch of events, and Tom Shannon, the TV star DJ, which featured bands like SRC, the Rationals, the Pleasure Seekers, Fruit of the Loom, and oh my God, my beloved Renaissance man, Scott Richardson. It was always special when I could play with his band. It was a great show. We had a blast, as we always did with them, and he was a great front man and very popular with the girls. So yeah, that was a fun engagement. Absolutely.
Yeah, he was not hard on the eyes. I mean,
No.
let's not be superficial, but let's be superficial.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah.
well, moving on for now, it's February 3rd. So, this is all happening very quickly. You go to New York City and then Boston. So, tell us what was going on here. Who did you gig with? Anything you want.
Actually, we played, let's see, in New York City, Boston concert. I don't even remember this. Man, tells you what I was focused on trying to hold the band together right then. And that was a fast one. Imagine, I mean, we left town, drive to New York City, come back, and then we play February 15th. We play Finch Auditorium with the MC5 at CMU, which was Central Michigan University at APM. And it was a newly formed, some kind of coordinating council working with SSAC. I have no idea what it was. But oddly, They did not get a good review. This was surprising to us. They always got good reviews. It said MC5 really kicked out the jams at their concert in Finch. It was a bill shared with the Pleasure Seekers, an all-female band which sang material from the Beatles to James Brown. And they lived up to their billing as a self-styled guerrilla type band when they shouted obscenities at the audience. And one member ended his serenade to a girl in the audience with a kiss. Okay, so the opinion of the people walking out the audience that the Pleasure Seekers were very good, but the MC5 were too loud and gross. I mean, the general attitude of the audience, one male student shouts, MC5, go to hell. Now that was a shocker. That was a shocker. I never heard them get a bad review. Certain people, I guess, didn't like them that much at that gig. What a surprise.
What a surprise is right. Now, where is Central? I mean, we can say it's Central Michigan, but how far away is it from Detroit? I'm
Oh.
wondering if it's just, it's a different kettle of fish, if we will, right? Or different
Well,
kettle of students.
none of them are too far from each other, maybe a couple hours. I'm trying to remember this. I can't remember what city it was in. CMU. We had the Ypsilanti one and Ann Arbor, and there are a lot of colleges. So you got me there. I don't remember how far away it was,
Well,
but
I'm just
it
wondering if
was a
that's
quick
what,
drive. It was a
yeah,
quick
but I'm just thinking because of the reception of the MC5 that was so out of the ordinary.
Yes, I know. It was such a shocker.
Well, I want to get to one more gig before we get to the Far East, but I do want to read something which I have posted before, but I think it's important because as you have talked about, the Pleasure Seekers always got good reviews. And in this case, the MC5, your homeboys, Dennis Machine Gun Thompson gave you an incredible review. So this was when the Pleasure Seekers and Cradle were inducted into the Detroit Music Awards at the Fillmore Theater in 2012. This is in Detroit. And again, it was Dennis Machine Gun Thompson who said, quote, "The Quatro Girls were the first all-female band that played instruments well and forerunners for many bands to follow. One kick-ass band!" Exclamation point. So, I mean, I just think that is incredible. It's amazing. And so now it's February 18th, going through March 1st. This is 69. You basically are now in Jackson, Michigan. So what do you remember about this gig? What do you remember in terms of the sets that you were doing? Because this is 10 days. And if you don't have memories to this, fine. But I do, because you just said something about the review naming your sets that you did from Beatles to James Brown. How
Right.
much of your original music were you now incorporating into your sets? Because now you have Elevator Express, you have Got to Get Away, you have What a Way to Die, you have Never Thought You'd Leave Me. So I'm just wondering, was it only still covers or was it a mix?
Well, we were doing our usual genre mix that we did all the time. A little bit of soul, a little bit of Stax, the Beatle, the English invasion type stuff. We did it all still. That was our forte. And, oddly, I don't remember us continuing to do Never Thought You'd Leave Me by now. We were doing What a Way to Die because it was a crowd favorite. They loved the beer and drinking song. And definitely we were doing Elevator and Gotta Get Away as the newer ones. So I think that's what happening at that thing. And do I remember that gig? No, not one. It must have been a club gig for a few days, the last one before we were going to head out. So I don't know.
It's in the rock ether, as you would say. And so, yes, it is now. It's March. The gig in Michigan and Jackson ends March 1st. So it's March 69. And the Far East tour is finally upon you.
Oh, my gosh.
And I can't wait to have this conversation with you, but I do want to give a little brief historical context that this trip to the Far East was during the height of the Vietnam War. And again, this is 1969. And there were many protesting at this point. It was a very unpopular war at the time. And yet many entertainers, including you, were summoned to entertain the military. And so you were initially summoned to Guam. You'd go over to Vietnam, but we'll get to that. And so with these, I'm just curious, here you are, this all-female girl band, and with these rising tensions across the globe, did you personally have any apprehension of going? And this is a reminder that you didn't have Leo Fenn, your manager, anymore to protect you. So did you have the same roadie or roadies? How did this logistically come about? Did you get passports? I'm assuming you did. What did you need special papers from the US government? Give us the buildup of the trip to the Far East, because this is not packing in a trailer and driving for 3 hours.
You know, I really think I was not involved at all in the details. I think Leo handled everything. And we were young and naive enough that we weren't scared to go. We were more excited to go because it had been put off and we were thinking about, oh, entertaining all the guys. And, you know, it was a thing for us to go and have fun with it and honor it, you know, and because, I mean, the middle of a friggin' war. So, I don't even think we took equipment except our guitars. I think they provided everything. That was the way it rolled. You know, they had everything there for us. So, and I don't even think we took a roadie, but I
Wow.
can't be positive, but I think it was just the girls hopping on the plane. Leo sorted all the passports and the papers, you know, whatever had to be done, he did. And off we went.
You went, and so that means Leo, even though he was out as your manager, this all had to have a lot of time and preparation
Oh,
ahead of
yeah.
time. So
Oh, yeah.
Leo worked on that and got that arranged. And so you told me, Patty, that you have a layover in Hawaii before
Yes.
heading to Guam. And tell us about the rooms there, the rooming situation. You just said you weren't handling all of this, that Leo was handling this. But you had mentioned to me privately that this was a bit of a, I don't want to say vacation, too strong of a word, but it was a bit of a respite to enjoy some downtime. So tell us what you remember about this layover in Hawaii.
Well, we were real excited. We wanted to see Hawaii. We hadn't been. So we just thought, oh, let's take a couple days. You know, I think we left a couple days early and whatever. And we got a couple hotel rooms and we were on the beach and having fun. Susie wouldn't sleep in the room. She hated sharing rooms. I mean, this is so weird. She's so weird sometimes. She slept on the beach. Oh, my, it was ridiculous. So we all got sunburned. It was crazy. Susie got hives. Nancy Rogers had a sun incident with her legs swelling up. She had what they called elephantitis. I mean, there we were when we left Hawaii and her legs were all swollen. They went down. They gave her medicines, but it was crazy. It was all sun-related stuff because we had just been baking in the sun. And we went to a bar and talked ourselves into doing a gig there for the hell of it. Just boom. And the venue owner was like, oh, an old girl band. How cool is that? So he put us up. We used the band's equipment and we did a one-off. We did a couple shows at a bar there. Oh, who
That's
knew?
incredible. That's incredible. When you're talking about Susie hated sharing rooms, all I can think about is when Susie would sleep in your trailer and use a Coke bottle to pee because she just wanted her quiet time. So Hawaii is now not necessarily living up to the fantasy that you wanted, although it sounds like you're still enjoying it, getting a gig at this club, completely spontaneous, all of that. And so, do you remember anything about this spontaneous gig?
Well, the crowd was really receptive. I mean, they were going crazy. You know, they hadn't seen a girl band, and it was just a really fun night. We had a blast with it. Oh, God, who knew?
Well, it sounds like your sisters, Susie and Arlene, had an even more of a blast. I'm not sure, because now you're heading to Guam. But you, Patty, band leader, Pat, tell us what happened as the band was heading to the airport and getting on the airplane.
Oh my God. Well, you got to realize Arlene and Leo were split up, right? So Arlene was already starting to date because she had wanted the marriage to end. So she was all gung-ho. And Susie was, you know, they were both flirting with guys at the airport, probably some of the guys from the bar and stuff. I mean, they weren't boyfriends or anything, just some guys in Hawaii. And they're flirting away. They could be real stinkers at times. So they don't show up. The plane is ready to take off. Pammy and I and Nancy, we're all there. Where's Susie? Where's Arlene? They're off in some corner flirting with these guys. I could have freaking killed them. They were holding up the plane in those days. I can't even believe that they waited for them. And they waited and they finally came waltzing up like, you know, nothing was wrong. Oh man, did I let them have it? I was so pissed.
I would have been really pissed too. And also because no offense to these pickup guys, but they're like nothing. It's not like these are serious
Nothing.
boyfriends that you'll never see again. And holding up an entire plane, that is ridiculous.
Oh my
Well,
God.
I would have been, like I said, I would have been pissed too. But despite this impromptu makeout session saying goodbye, so they do make the flight and you're now heading to Guam. And so what were your thoughts about Guam as you landed and got situated?
Guam was amazing. It was very tropical feeling. We had nice rooms. We came to love these cute little geckos, green geckos, that would float across our pillow. I mean, they were all over the island and they didn't scare us. They were just so cute. And we played a mix of the officers' club with the wives. God, five finger puke. They always wanted us to turn down, keep it softer. Shut up. And the military men, when we played for them, man, they wanted it to rock out, of course. And they were treated us great. We had a submarine tour. We had great food. It was a blast. We were ready to flirt and have fun with these younger men, which we did. We performed our usual mixed genre of songs from English rock to soul. And the men loved having this girl band coming to entertain them, as you can well imagine.
Oh,
It
I think they must have been in heaven. And Patty, you have given me, and I will be sharing with all the listeners, some extraordinary pictures from this time in Guam. It's just amazing. So
Yep.
after this magical time in Guam, the pleasure seekers were slated to go to Vietnam, which I believe you did. I want you to clarify this, but your gig in Vietnam was canceled. So tell us about this and how you got the news of the cancellation, and more importantly, why it was canceled so abruptly.
Okay, well, this incident had happened like in 68, I think, where a Jeep was found in the jungle in the Viet Cong, and there was a girl hiding underneath. It was a band that was supposed to perform, and all the members were dead, and the military men that were driving the Jeep and stuff were dead. And it was never resolved, but they blamed it on the Viet Cong. They stopped anybody, any bands going. It became like a danger zone. Okay. And then here we come in 69, and it had, some time had passed, and they were going to take a chance and let us go over, and we were slated to go. And they just decided that it was too risky, and they canceled. They didn't let us go. So, I mean, that's what happened, but more happened. Oh
Well,
my God.
before we get to that, and I tried to do a little bit of research on this ambush that happened. And so, yes, it was July 1968. So you're there in March 69. So yes, it's enough time has gone by, but this is not in the same day and age of social media and 24/7 news and all of that. And so the little bit of information I found was in July 1968, the American entertainment group Brandy Perry and the Bubble Machine was ambushed in Vietnam, resulting in the deaths, as you said, of two of its members. And there were, as you said, there were two military or one, it's unclear on that, but they meaning the military, could not figure out who did this. They blamed the Viet Cong, but we don't know. And according to rumors, the gun was a American rifle. Now I'm really bad with guns, but it was, so they don't know, but I think and the band, they were young, they were teenagers. And so I think the fact that this was only one, it's one female singer with the rest being guys, and they were unsafe, let alone a group of all female, really attractive women, not garnering a lot of attention. And so, in addition, so this gets canceled. I shouldn't have said in addition. So this gets canceled, but what I was going to say, they add something to your gig since the gig was canceled. And this is where I want you to really tell us what was going on. This is so emotional. This is so real life in real time. And so the gig is canceled. You're in Vietnam. What's next?
No, we're not in Vietnam. We're in Guam.
You're still, so that's what I wanted you to clarify. So
They
you
wouldn't let
know,
us come.
okay, so you didn't ever go to Vietnam.
No.
So you stay in Guam, and instead of heading home immediately, thank you for clarifying that. Okay, so tell us how this began and what happened.
It's a horrible story. I'll never forget it the rest of my life. It was considered a danger zone still. This was near the end of our tour, And we were asked, since it was going to cancel, if we could instead do a hospital tour. Now, that was quite shocking to us as we were not sure what to expect, what they meant. We had an acoustic guitar and we were to do, if you can believe this, a walk through the staging area where the men had been airlifted from the killing fields, is what they called them, and try to entertain the men awaiting surgery. Bed after bed after bed after. This was a shocker at our age, being asked to do this. And of course, we wanted to help up, but it freaked us out. Picture the hideous scene, okay? Rows of men bloodied, full of shrapnel, some blind, some missing limbs or partial limbs hanging from strapping, some conscious, some unconscious, some men ranting, high on pills, many of them not even cleaned up. One young man lay in bed, completely covered in some bloody bandages. His entire right side seemed to be missing, probably about 18 years old. We said, biting back tears, "Hi, we're here to sing for you." He was flying high on painkillers. He said, "I'm doing okay, wounded a little bit, but I can't wait to get back there and kill some more of those little slit-eyed Viet Cong bastards. Just get me back on the field. I'll show them we mean fucking business. Get me back there. Get me back there now." We took our breath away. We quietly moved on down the row of beds. We had to hold in our emotions. Near the end, one guy we came upon, blinded, who spoke very softly with his arms hanging from straps. He said, real soft, "Can you play Try a Little Tenderness?" Oh my fucking God. We about lost it. We did we did the song for him, and he smiled through his pain. That was hard to see. Ooh.
Oh, Patty, I'm just, you're bringing tears to my eyes. How did you get through that moment? That is, I mean, it's hard enough to still talk about. How did you, first of all, I mean, that, as you said, you're so young, but what did you break down or lose it in front of the troops or later?
This
Talk to us.
was a huge life lesson right in our face on the real looks of a war raging and what it did to these young men. We did finish and walked out, and Susie fainted in the hall. The rest of us were in tears. It was the walk of death. We were truly seeing the faces of death and war. I will say that hospital experience was forever embedded in my mind as the most important lesson on war and what these soldiers give up for their country. It was a gobsmack to my gut for years after having experienced that. I cannot, honestly, I cannot state any other more important gig that I ever played that mattered to these poor men and their suffering. Forget audiences, forget clapping and cheering and, "Oh, you're so good," and all that shit. None of it meant more to me than having experienced that event and what it meant. It was by far the most rewarding and important performance I would ever have given in my music career.
Oh, Patty, that's incredible. I'm sure I can only imagine Susie passing out, not because it's Susie, but I mean, I'm not surprised all of you didn't. This is so in your face, painful, and I love what you just said. Of course, that was the most important gig you've ever done. And so you have this life-changing, if you will, experience, and it's now the end of your Far East tour, cut off early due to the danger zone realities in Vietnam. You've played for these extraordinary patriots, some who didn't even know if they were going to make it or not. And you then, which I want you to tell us all about, you end up bringing home, and I do not mean this romantically, this is not a Susie and Arlene thing, makeout session.
No,
You
no.
bring home two guys, and this was equally as serious. So tell us about them. Who were they, and how did this happen?
Well, one of the guys, it was funny, at the very end, we were awarded one of the men's service plaques. And I think it was Tim's, the one that came with us home. And given instead to us, he gave us his plaque for service for coming over and doing this tour. And it must have been the end of this guy's stint there. Tim and an ex-Viet Cong deserter named Tong flew home with us to visit our home for a few days. Tong was deeply affected seeing how we lived in America. We tried to show them around, and Tong was, he just couldn't believe how Americans lived. And then they left. This is the sad part. I still can't believe it or not. And for reasons I still do not comprehend, it was time for Tong to go back to his home in Vietnam. That was Tong's choice. After we put him on a plane, we spoke to Tim, who had tried to change his mind, but Tong wanted to go home. And Tim's last words to us were that he knew Tong would be killed at home as a deserter. He knew that. He knew what he was going home to. Oh my
Well,
God.
I just want to clarify, Patty. So Tim, who is now at the end of his stint, I think whatever theater, I don't know any more vocabulary, he brings Tong, who's a Viet Cong deserter. They come to Detroit. Where did they stay for
With
these few
us,
days? So they
they
stayed at the
stayed at the
Quattro
Quattro
House.
home. Yes, they did. My mother had made her chocolate chip cookies, and we showed them all around town. Oh, it was unbelievable.
Well, this is just all so incredibly heavy. And yet, the uplift, the love, and the joy you brought to the troops, it makes me emotional,
Yeah.
most especially the ones valiantly fighting for their lives. And thank God we're high as kites.
Yeah.
I mean, so they
Oh
didn't
my
have to have
God.
that pain and wanting to have this, the beautiful salve that music can provide, only music can provide. And you live through this and you experience this, Patty. So, as we close out this really emotional episode, what are your final thoughts on this tour in the Far East?
Oh my God. What can you say when you experience such a horror and so young? We had no idea. The idea that we had lived through seeing and living history in real time stayed with us. You can't unsee what we had seen at that hospital. It's with you forever. The blood, the pain, the carnage, the suffering. There was nothing to do but try to uplift these men as we did the walk of death and in their most dire moments. Kristen, it was the very least we could do for them, and an honor and a privilege. All we could do was try a little tenderness.
Oh, she may be weary. Them young girls, they do get weary wearing that same old shaggy dress. Yeah. But when she gets weary, try a little tenderness. Yeah. You know she's waiting, just anticipating for things that she'll never, 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 never possess. Yeah. But while she's there waiting, and without them, try a little tenderness. Gotta do. It's not just sentimental, no, no, no. She has her grief and care. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But the soft words, they all spoke so gentle, yeah. It makes it easier, easier to bear. Yeah. You won't regret it, no, no. Young girl, Drop!